Okay, good morning, everyone. Today we are continuing Tamid. We're in the first parak of Tamid, and today's daf is Chaf Ches. Okay, Chaf Ches 28. 28 is as we started marking already from Masechta Me'ila. So, but it's in terms of Tamid, we're not that far in. It's our third daf of Tamid, let's say. Okay, and we are in the middle of Chaf Zayin Amud Beis, right at the two dots in the middle. We're going to continue. Ira Keri Be'echad Mehem. So again, day in the life in the Beis HaMikdash, we are just recounting exactly what happens, what transpires in the Beis HaMikdash. So we're now early in the morning, not even in the morning, we're still somewhere in the middle of the night, and if one of them becomes a Baal Keri, so you remember how the Mishnah described it, he would go down into the tunnel. Meaning from the Beis HaMokad, he would now go down into the tunnel and follow a winding tunnel. I saw the Ravid. Ravid was interesting. He says that if you read the Mishnah carefully, the Mishnah says it was not to go down to this tunnel to find the mikvah. So you look at the Mishnah. Yotzev aholech lo b'misiba haolechas otach sabira v'neiros dolkos. The Mishnah says it was many fires to get to the tunnel. And so the Ravid says it was a winding path. Meaning it was not just a simple, like, straight tunnel that went to the, that got you this mikvah. It was a winding path underneath, and you needed more than one fire. Okay. Anyway, so the, Irakar Be'echad Mehem, is Kashu, Be'echad Mehem, so the Gemara now makes the following commentary. Now, remember, he's a Baal Keri, so he's Tamei. So, Misayel, Rav Yochanan Damar Michilson, is Kashu Baal Keri Mishlechas Echutz Lashnei Machanos. There are two points of consideration over here. Point number one is, the Mechilos were not Niskadesh, right? We talked about this idea before, but the Gemara here says it straight out, which is that a Tamei cannot be in the Makom HaMikdash, right? A Tamei person cannot be either in the Azara, nor in the Har Bayis, nor in Yerushalayim. Again, it depends on which type of Tamei we're talking about, but another, they have Kedusha. However, subterranean does not have Kedusha's Beis HaMikdash, does not have Kedusha's Har Bayis, has no Kedusha whatsoever. Meaning, so once you're subterranean, so it simply does not have Kedusha. So, I'm a Mechilas on this Kashu. So that's point number one. And the second point is, Baal Keri Mishlechas Echutz Lashnei Machanos. Now, the second point is not necessarily correlated to the first point. The second point is that when you're a Baal Keri, you have to go out of two Machanos. Meaning, you cannot be in Machane Shechina and Machane Levia. Right? Let's remind each other. There are three Machanos in total. The innermost and the one with the most kedusha is obviously the Azara. That is Makom Shechina, right? The Machane Shechina. The second one around that is Har Bayis. Har Bayis, which is Machane Levia, and the third one around that is what's called Machane Yisrael, which it translates to the city of Yerushalayim, as is whatever is in the Chomas Ha'ir, in the wall within the wall of the city. Fine. Now we also know that if you're Tamei Meis, so the only thing you're excluded from is the Azara. Okay, so you come into contact with a dead body, and now you have Tumas Meis, you can't go into the Azara. Har Bayis you can be, but you cannot go into the Azara. And we also know that if you're a Zav or a Zava, you can't go into Har Bayis, you're sent out of Har Bayis, you're allowed to be in Yerushalayim. Now, who can't be in Yerushalayim? What's our third Tamei? Mitzora. Mitzora can't be in Yerushalayim, Mitzora has to be outside of Yerushalayim. Fine. When you think about it, it's very good. It's a good question. I'm not going to have a good answer. But when you think about it, you realize that it's not intuitive. Right? You would think that Tumah Meis, which is the highest degree of Tumah, would exclude you. It's a great question. I don't have a good answer. It would exclude you from... You should be further excluded from the Beis HaMikdash. Good. Very good. Okay?
The Balkan is also on the Tumah. Balkan is on the Tumah. It can transfer to...
Yes. You're a Baal Keri, you're an Avatuma. Absolutely. So the those are the things which are clear. So now a Baal Keri. Now Baal Keri and Zav are very similar to one another, but they're not the same. It's not the same. And so a Baal Keri status-wise, where is it going to fall under? That's what we need Rav Yochanan for. Meaning Rav Yochanan is here to give us a chiddush that a Baal Keri has the same status vis-a-vis where you have to leave, same status as a Zav. Just like a Zav has to be sent out of Beis Machanos, Machane Shechina, and Machane Levia, which again translates to the Azara and the Har Bayis. Same thing is true with the Baal Keri. Baal Keri has to go outside of the of the Azara and outside of the Har HaBayis as well. How does Rav Yochanan see that from the Mishnah? It's very simple. Because the Baal Keri, once he goes back up to the Beis HaMokad, he could stay in the Beis HaMokad because half of the Beis HaMokad is outside of the Azara. Half the Beis HaMokad is in Har HaBayis. So why not just stay in the Beis HaMokad? And meanwhile, the Mishnah says that at his first opportunity, he'll leave the Beis HaMokad and he's got to go outside. Okay, so that's what Rav Yochanan says. That's what you learn out from the Mishnah. Haneros Dolkin Mikan Umikan. Okay, so the Gemara now is going to speak a little bit in terms of bathroom etiquette. Okay, bathroom talk. But the good bathroom talk. So Rav Safra HaYosef Beis HaKiseh, it's a Rabbi Abba. So Rav Safra is sitting in the bathroom, and along comes Rabbi Abba. Nachar Lay. So Rabbi Abba grunts. Nachar Nechira, right, we talked about that a lot in Chulin. Okay, it's a guttural. It's a grunt. So Amar Lay, so now, what's going on is that Rabbi Abba is trying to communicate with the Rav Safra. And Rabbi Abba now wants to see whether or not somebody is actually inside in the bathroom. So rather than talking, because talking is inappropriate, we'll talk about why that is in just a moment. But rather than talking, so he lets out a guttural grunt. Okay, this is going to be now communication in the bathroom. And Rabbi Safra, who doesn't seem to be getting the message, Rabbi Safra just simply says, "Oh yeah, come in." Now, is it going to be a little bit awkward that Rabbi Safra is inviting him into the bathroom while Rabbi Safra is already still in the bathroom? Of course, that's a little bit awkward. But as we'll learn in just a moment, Rabbi Safra's motivation is a good motivation. We'll see in just a second. Amar Lay Omar. So Rabbi Safra says, "Come on in." So Basa Danafeit, so okay, now what happened after that point in time? I'm not sure, but whatever happened after that happened. And now the two of them, were they sitting there simultaneously? I don't know. It's not almost beside the point. So Basa Danafik, but now the two of them exited. Amale Ravaba. So Ad Khan Lo Salikta Le Seir and Gamar Tamila de Seir. So Rabbi Abba says to Rav Safra, "You know, you're funny. Meaning, you just came to Seir. Now, Seir here is a reference to Rome. Meaning, apparently, Rav Safra started his life in Bavel and he lived with the Persians. Now, I'll speak to my Persian friends over here in the front of the room. So, apparently, there was a lot of etiquette amongst the Persians, especially in terms of bathroom etiquette and modesty." I guess it's a strange question, but I don't know if you have anything to say about Persian conduct in the bathroom. But apparently, he says, "Look, right? They don't even talk about it." Very good. So fine. So you come from Bavel. All right. And now you're here in Israel. Now Israel really is Rome. Meaning, remember, we're talking now about the Amoraim, period of the Amoraim. So Israel was really just a little vassal of Rome. So now you come amongst the Romans. Now they're not modest. So Ad kan lo salita l'seir, gamarta mila d'seir, and you're behaving like a Roman. Meaning, look at you. I'm obviously grunting because I don't want to talk to you because that's not appropriate. And I'm trying to make sure that no one's in the bathroom. And what would have been appropriate is some sort of sound, a guttural sound. Just telling me that you're there. That's all I wanted. And not only did you speak to me, but then you invited me into the bathroom also. Like, what's wrong with you? So, lav hachi tanan, matzo na'o be'adu she'esham adam, le'meme de'lomi ba'ile le'meo. So, right? And he says, and look at the Mishnah in Talmud. Meaning, I know the Mishnah in Talmud is talking about the Beis HaMikdash, but there are takeaway points from that Mishnah in Talmud, notably that the Kiseh HaKavod mentioned in the Mishnah in Talmud, the first Mishnah in Talmud, had a door, and the door was locked, and you knew somebody was in there. So in other words, it is inappropriate to relieve yourself next to another person. And so, A, I want to see if anyone's there. B, you shouldn't have spoken to me. And C, you certainly shouldn't have invited me in while you yourself were relieving yourself. Like, what are you thinking? So for Rav Safra, so the Gemara now will clue us into what Rav Safra was thinking. Rav Safra saw, Dema Mesukanhu. So Rav Safra thought that he really needed to go. And it is according to the Gemara, medically unsound to hold it in. And Rav Safra was thinking that this is now, I understand that there's appropriate amos behavior, but not at the expense of serious medical issues. And so he thought that when Rabbi Abba was making a guttural sound, perhaps, this is me just suggesting, maybe that he thought the guttural sound meant I really needed to go. Maybe. Whatever the case is, Rav Safra thought that this was a medical emergency, that he really needed to go. And so therefore, it is immodest to invite somebody else to come in. It's inappropriate, but he felt that over here it was warranted. So, Kidetanya, the Gemara says, and we learned in a Braisa, Shimon Gamla Omer, Amod HaChozer Mevi'es Adamli Dei Hidrakon, and Siluka HaChozer Mevi'es Adamli Dei Hidrakon, that if you hold in. So the first thing he describes is holding in gedolim, right? Number two. So it, maybe hidrakon, at least some sort of infection of the bowel, and if you hold in urine, so maybe adam leidei lirakon leads to some sort of jaundice. Okay, so the Gemara says that that's what Rav Safra was thinking, and that's why Rav Safra invited him into the bathroom, even though, of course, from a modesty standpoint, it is inappropriate. Okay, our takeaway points from here is that. First of all, you should not, in other words, in terms of gedolim, in terms of number two, for sure it should be in a private area, and the door should be closed, meaning should be in a partitioned area, right? Most of our bathrooms comply. In fact, all of our bathrooms comply to that. Every bathroom that's constructed nowadays, the public bathrooms, have those areas. What about ketanim? What about urinating? So there, I think we tend to be more makel. Where I know you go to any public bathroom, so the urinals are not partitioned one from another. But I think from a halachic standpoint, I think we tend to be more makel in terms of urinating in the presence of other people. Amale Rav Lechia Bre. Rav speaks now to his son is Chia. V'chein Amale Rav Huna L'Rabba Bre. Chashich Takin Nafshecha V'Kadim Takin Nafshecha. When are the best times to go to the bathroom? Okay, late at night, really early in the morning. Okay, why are these such opportune times to go to the bathroom? So the Gemara says, because these are times where not a lot of people are awake. So it's, by definition, private times. If it were daytime, you don't want to, in other words, again, indoor plumbing was, for them, you know, science fiction. No. Right? So for them, in other words, if it was the middle of the day and they had to go to the bathroom, they really had to find a place to go. And it meant that they would have to walk far away. And so what he's suggesting to him is, if you go early in the morning, you go late at night, you can find a place that's close by. Okay, good. The Gemara says exactly that. So you don't have to go far away. Now, tov v'gale kase v'kum. You want to be modest when you go to the bathroom. So first sit down, then expose yourself. After relieving yourself, cover yourself, then stand up. Meaning really should not be in a situation where you are unclothed at any time other than when it's absolutely necessary, when you're actually relieving yourself. Shatof v'shasi, shatof v'achis. When you drink from a cup, make sure to rinse out the cup. Hygienics, this is hygienics. We're in the topic now of hygiene and modesty and appropriateness. So shatov v'shasi v'shatov v'achis, and when you finish drinking, so then you should rinse it again for the next person who would want to drink from this cup, right? There's an issue about showering after having gone to the mikvah, right? It's an issue in of itself. So I remember in Eretz Yisrael once I asked somebody about showering before the mikvah, after the mikvah. So he says you should do both. So he says you should shower before going to the mikvah, you know, for those people who didn't. And you should... and you should...
it was like Gezeri in the Middle Ages, the mikvah were like really, really disgusting.
Yeah, yeah.
And people would shower afterwards, and the Chacham didn't want people to think that...
To think, correct.
The Gezeri, they should take a shower.
Correct, absolutely correct. So, right, the accepted minhag is not to. However, the problem was is that their mikvahs were not...
You could dry off and then shower.
dry yourself off, and then right. Shatov v'shasi shatov v'achi. So again, so rinse your cup up before you drink. Rinse it after you drink. And now, when you're drinking and you want your talmid and you want to give some to your talmid, so make sure to pour a little bit out. Meaning, he's not going to want your backwash, so pour a little bit out and then give it to your talmid. Kid, Tanya, the Gemara quotes the Brisa, Lo yishta adam mayim v'tein l'tamido. Don't drink water and then just simply hand it straight to your talmid. Aleim kein shafach mehem. The Brisa says exactly that, and the Brisa then tells a story, an unbelievable story. Ma'isa b'echa shashas ha'mayim v'lo shafach mehem. There was a story once where somebody drank and he didn't pour out, and he just handed it to a student. V'nasal l'tamido v'also talmid istin esayi. Now the talmid looked at it and really did not appeal to him. The idea that his Rebbe's backwash is sitting right there on the cup. So below Rav Salishtos, and he didn't want to drink, but he was just offered a drink. And so, in other words, it's one thing not to drink, it's another thing to be offered a drink, but then being unable to drink it, you develop a certain craving to it. So, umes bitsameh, and he died. He died out of thirst. Okay, hard to really understand the story, but okay, for what it is, it's however making the larger point that really should be considerate of other people. And when you drink from something, the other person may not want to drink from it, so you really should spill out a little bit. Ba'osa sha amru, lo yishte adam mayim v'yitel natamida, elakim shavach mehem. So from that point, they issued a rule, meaning it wasn't just like, you know, here's, you know, etiquette, here's, you know, fine etiquette of drinking. Now they issued a rule that when you drink from a cup, and now you pass it to somebody else, make sure to pour a little bit out. And I guess they had an issue a rule, I'm guessing, they had an issue a rule because the consideration is, well, I'm going to pour something out that's bal tashkis, meaning I don't want to just simply pour onto the floor. For what reason? So now we're giving a very good reason, because the next person who you're passing it on to may not want to drink and enjoy your backwash.
The point of the second, I think, Rabbi Sherman says, that somebody who is really your favorite is that we have beis hakisei sacrificial.
Right, correct. Right. Rav Ashi Amar Hilka Chai Talmida Deshafech Chamei Rabbe Leis Be Mishumav Kerusa. And Rav Ashi says, and let's take this just one step further. Meaning, let's say you're a Talmid who just got past a cup, and your Rebbe, for whatever reason, didn't pour out a little bit of the drink. And now you're in this position where he's my Rebbe. I'm not going to just take the cup from him and pour it down on the ground. That's not respectful to my Rebbe. So the Gemara goes now one step further. You can do it. In other words, as a Talmud now, from the perspective of the Talmud, if you got handed the cup from your Rebbe and you don't pour it on the ground, and you do pour it on the ground, you're not. That's not hefkeiros. That's not considered being disrespectful towards your Rebbe. Okay.
It's something that you should have done.
Right. The Rebbe should have done it. The Rebbe didn't do it, and now you have the right to do it. Kol midi lo tiflot be'ape rabcha. Other things you shouldn't do in front of your Rebbe, you shouldn't spit. Now, it used to be back in the good old days, everyone had a spittoon in their house. Okay, and we don't have one. But and I don't chew tobacco, and we don't have a spittoon. But it used to be back in the good old days, spitting was normal. I mean, it was normal conduct. Okay, now it's relegated to the baseball field. That's it. That's the only place where you're really going to see some serious spitting going on. Although, yeah, the ball players also stop chewing tobacco, so they like the high that it gives them. It gives them a nice, it's like a stimulant. Anyway, so so you should not spit in front of your Rebbe. You're eating something, you develop a lot of phlegm in your mouth or a lot of saliva in your mouth. Don't spit in front of your Rebbe. Bar mikra v'daisa. Except for the saliva that you develop when you eat kra, some sort of gourd, and daisa, some sort of cereal. And the Gemara says, now I don't understand this that well, but that's fine. The kepesila shel eiver damu. It's like eating hot lead. Now, the Gemara uses this analogy, right, if you remember your Sanhedrin talk, because one of the ways to put somebody to death is by fire. When we say fire, we mean molten lead that was melted down and now turned into liquid lead. So, and that was poured down his throat. So the Gemara is using this as an analogy, meaning it's really not, it's not edible. And so therefore, when you have the saliva that's built up by after eating the gourd or after eating the dice of the cereal, so even in front of your Rebbe, you should spit it out. Okay. Tanan Hasam. The Gemara now is going to quote a Mishnah in Midos. why are we quoting this Mishnah in Midos? So it's an interesting rush. The Rush says, you know, by Midos, by Talmud we have a little bit of Gemara. A little bit. Right, when we get to the second Perek of Talmud, we're going to have zero Gemara. Right, Talmud's a strange Masechta. It's hard to understand, right, when they did put in Gemara, when they did not put in Gemara. So, but there is a little bit of Gemara. In Midos, no Gemara. Midos is a Masechta, which we're going to see right after Talmud, which has in it zero Gemara. It is just Mishnayos. Five Prakim of Mishnayos. So, we have now an opportunity to have a more discussion about a Mishnah in Midos, so why not? So the Rush says, okay, so, and it kind of fits into what we're talking about now, so we're going to bring it in now, just so we have an opportunity to have a little Gemara talk on the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Midos says the following, this is the first parak of Midos, this is the second Mishnah in Midos. Ish harabait hayim echazer kol mishmar mishmar. Now remember, there was watchings, there was guardings that night. Yesterday we spoke in detail about the 21 guardings of the Levium, plus the 3 guardings of the Kohanim, and they were stationed all around the Azara and the Harabayas, and they had to stay up all night, meaning part of being on guard means you had to be awake. Right? The only criteria, really, to be a guard is to be awake. And now we did learn yesterday, right? Remember Gemara yesterday's Mishnah, and Gemara, that they could sit down. They didn't have to stand the whole time. They got tired, they could sit down. But, warning, in other words, if you're going to sit, you're going to be tempted to fall asleep. So, the Mishnah in Midos takes us now through what happens if the Levim fall asleep. Tanan Hasan, we learned in the Mishnah over there, Ish Har Habayis Hayim Echazer Kol Mishmar Mishmar. So there was an appointed man, in Ish Har Habayis, who would be going around from Mishmar to Mishmar, Vavukas Dol Kol Safanav, and he would be having a torch. Remember, it's the middle of the night. Of course he would be having a torch. V'chol Mishmar Sheino Omeid, the Amar Lei. So let's say he comes up to a Mishmar, right, to a stationed Levi, and he's not standing up. So now he's sitting down. Okay, that doesn't necessarily mean he's sleeping. Amar Lei, Ish Har Habayis, Shalom Aleichem. So, it's a very simple test. He extends a Shalom Aleichem. How are you doing? So, Shalom Aleichem, Nikar Shu Yashen. Now, if you don't get a response, you know. Sleeping on the job.
That would wake me up right there.
Nikar Shu Yashen. It depends how fast asleep you are. Chov to Bamaklo. So the first thing that he did to get his attention is he would hit him with a stick. But that would just be the first way to get his attention. Wait till you see the next way we got his attention. Rishus Haisalo, Lisrof is Ksuso. And we have permission to burn his clothing. So in other words, with the torch that he has in his hand to help illuminate the way, so he'll just simply take it now and burn his clothing. The Hamomrim.
Now, then he has to run all the way to the Beit HaMikdash and destroy it?
Yeah, property of the Beit HaMikdash is destroying it. So that may explain the rush. I'm going to share with you a rush in just a moment. That's difficult to understand, but you may be anticipating what the rush was, what's bothering the rush. Give me a moment, I'll come back to it. So, the Hamomrim now. Everyone else, right? Can you imagine? It's unbelievable. Right in the middle of the night now. So there's screaming going on. We smell a little bit of smoke. What's going on? Vehem omrim, makol ba'azara, kol ben Levi loke, ubigadav nisrafim. Shiashin lo al mishmar. We got it. There must be somebody who fell asleep. In other words, then kol ha'am yishmu uviyirau. Everyone else is hearing it, and they're like, "Oh, we're not going to fall asleep. Right? We don't want this." So in other words, correct. There's a tumult. An official tumult was created specifically for that reason, so that people would understand this is not who you want to be. You don't want to be the guy that's beaten, and your clothing burnt. Right. And you may think that this is all just storytelling. The Mishnah says this is not just storytelling. This actually happened. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Omer. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says, now Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, please understand, is the author of the Mishnayos of Midos. So our perspective of Midos comes to us via Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, and now he's going to tell us a story, which is, Pamachas Matsuas Achi Ami, meaning this happened to my uncle, my mother's brother, Yashem Vistafas Kisuso, where he fell asleep and they actually burned his clothing. So we are not just simply storytelling over here. This actually happened, Maisa Shahaya. Okay. Now, I promised a rush. Now, all I have to do is just find it. Now, the rush is a little bit tricky to find because the rush kind of lost pace with our Gemara. Meaning the rush on this Amud is still commenting on yesterday's daf.
Oh.
Yeah, I found it. Urishus hayalo lisrof kisuso. If you want like to see it, it's in the rush on this Amud. It is as the lines get wide, it is more than halfway down. From the bottom of the paragraph, it's about 15 lines from the bottom of the paragraph. The first word in the line is Kiai Gavna, then it starts off with the Divra Amasko, Rishus Haya Lisrof, Kisusova, Inkam Shim Bal Tashchis. So the Rush kind of brings up a different issue, meaning Bal Tashchis. Right? Aren't you destroying something? And you can't just simply destroy things. That's an Issa in the Torah, Bal Tashchis. And the Rush says Hefker based in Hefker. A seeming non sequitur of the Rush. Right? And he says, well, Hefker based in Hefker, meaning, you know that Beis Din has the right to disavow you of your property. They have that right. It's a powerful right that they have. And we invoke it many times throughout Shas. This power of Beis Din, of Hefker based in Hefker. And the Rush says, because they have that right, so therefore there's no issue about Tashchis. Do I totally understand the connection between the two? No, I really don't. Perhaps, Ben, like what you suggested earlier, meaning maybe, the Rush doesn't say this, and you know, maybe I'm reading too much into the Rush, but maybe the Rush over here is bothered by your issue of this property of the right property of the Beis HaMikdash, the clothing that the Levi was worn. But that's an assumption. I don't know if that's correct. And so maybe by Hefker based in Hefker, that now removes any Me'ilah issue. But again, that's a lot more than what the Rush says. I don't know if that's what the Rush is really means by that. Okay. We are back to the Gemara. And now, as I mentioned, the reason why this is all a Mishnah, everything I just read is a Mishnah Midos. We're going to start Midos, and you're going to hear me say this again. Good. That's good review. Why are we bringing it up right now in Talmud? Because we're going to now take an opportunity to hear some of the comments of the Amoraim on this Mishnah in Midos. When Rav Yochanan gets up to this Mishnah, in Midos, Rav Yochanan would have the following comment to say about this Mishnah in Midos. Amar Hachi. This is what he would say, Rav Yochanan. Ashreyem l'rishonim shafilo al oneshena osei din. Shalo al oneshena achas kama v'kama. Now, falling asleep, you understand, it's not the biggest deal in the world. Meaning, I know they shouldn't. We understand they shouldn't. But it's late at night, it's dark, they're tired. You can kind of understand how it is they fell asleep. And meanwhile, look at the tochacha that they received for falling asleep. And they loved it. Now, again, I'm not saying this. I'm not saying this. You're right, speak for yourself. This is Rav Yochanan saying this. They loved it. They loved the tochacha they received, meaning they were interested in self-perfection. And yes, in other words, then if your job is to stay up all night, and that's your job, so you need to stay up all night. And if they fall asleep, okay, good, they're going to get their clothing burnt. Meaning, and that was part of the tochacha, that was part of their self-perfection, and they loved it. And that's over falling asleep, which is totally understandable. Now, if it's something where they needed correction on another thing, which is less understandable, can you imagine how much more they would want tochacha? They wanted to be rebuked. They wanted self-perfection. Tanya the Gemara now is going to talk a little bit about tochacha. And a person's desire that he should have to receive tochacha. And conversely, also the obligation for another one to give tochacha. Tanya, we learned in a braisa, Rabbi Omer, Ezu derech yishar shiyavar lo ha'adam. What's the way that a person should choose? A path that a person should choose. Now, it sounds like we're going into Pirkei Avos, as one of the Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos opens up exactly with this line, but we're going to go in a different direction. This is a braisa. This is not a Mishnah. Yehav esa tochachas. Tochachos. You should love tochacha. Love it. She calls mancha tochachas ba'olam, nachas ruch ba'olam. Anytime that there's rebuke and reprimand and someone's correcting and someone's being corrected, that's a good thing. So, nachas ruch ba'olam, the world is going to have calm and tranquility. Tova u'bracha ba'olam. Good and bracha will come into this world. V'ra misalakis ba'olam, and evil will depart this world, all on account of the person loving to be rebuked, reprimanded, and constructively criticized. Shenema the pasuk, he quotes the pasuk of Mishlei, Olam Achicham Yin'am. Those that rebuke Yin'am will have no one, will have pleasantness. V'alem tavo birchas tov. Yesh omrim yachzik be'emuna yisera. Now, the Yesh omrim says, again, this goes back to the Ezehu derech sheyavelo adam, sherev emuna yisera. You should be super trustworthy. Meaning you say something, you keep your word. That is also another excellent midah that you should have. Shenemar Eine b'ne'emani eretz l'sheves imadin. Anyone who is unbelievably trustworthy will end up sitting with me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amar Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rav Yonasan. More on the topic of tochacha. Kol hamochiach es chaver l'shem shamayim. If you reprimand your friend and you're doing it l'shem shamayim, meaning strictly for the sake of heaven, because you would like him to improve his ways, and you're not doing it to aggrandize yourself, you're not doing so to feel superior to somebody else, just simply because you would like him to correct his ways. And by the way, I'll also add the Gemara in Erechin, which we did not that long ago. You also need to know that he wants to hear it. Meaning, if you know that he doesn't want to hear it, so the Gemara in Erechin says, don't give it. Okay, that takes us all the way back to Erechin. So zochel lechelko shal kadosh baruch hu. You're going to get a chelik of God. I don't know fully what that means, but it sounds good. Shenamar mochiach adam acharai v'lo od ela shemoshivin alav chut shal chesed. You'll have chut shal chesed. It's an expression the Gemara uses often. Right? It doesn't translate well into English. Right? A string of grace. In other words, but you'll have chen. You'll find favor with other people. Shenamar chen yematzei mimachlik lashon. Okay, we're back to the Mishnah, and our Mishnah here in Tamid, Matzanol Yadua, and we are now going to fast forward in the Mishnah to Trumas Hadeshen. Okay, Trumas Hadeshen was the first avoda that was done in the Beis HaMikdash every morning. It was done before daybreak. It was done probably even before dawn, and we're going to describe. It was really, really dark, and the Trumas Hadeshen is where we go up onto the ramp, up to the Mizbeach, take a shovelful of ashes. Go down. We're going to describe it in detail in just a moment. This is the first avoda of the day. Who gets it? Whoever gets up. Whoever wants it and gets there. Now, that could be more than one person. So what do you do if there's more than one person? So our Mishnah says take a lottery. That's what our Mishnah says. But the Gemara is going to see a little difficulty in our Mishnah. Now the Gemara sees a kasha in the Mishnah. Now to be fair and honest, I didn't see this kasha. And you may agree with me. Now, perhaps you didn't see this as a kasha, but the Gemara sees a kasha in the Mishnah. Why? Amart Misha who wrote the Litrum as a Mizbech Mashkin V'Tovel Ashelo Yave Amamuna. Because what does the Mishnah say? Tovel, and then go meet with the appointed man, right? The administrator. So Alma La B'Fayis Talia Milson. Now that sounds like there was no lottery that was done. Okay. I mean, the way I understood the Mishnah, and the reason why I didn't see this as being much of a kasha, is because I assume that you told them the mikvah, so you can then go to the lottery
right. And
be prepared. Now, what I'm suggesting right now, the Gemara will suggest in just a couple lines from now. But right now, as the Gemara is asking the question, the Gemara assumes that if you're toveling in the mikvah, that means that you're going straight to work. Okay. Without a lottery. I know that in of itself, that's difficult to understand, because what if there's more than one person? I get it. But right now, that's what the Gemara believes is how you read the first part of the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah talks about a lottery. Ama b'payis talya milsa. So that sounds like the lottery is really where it's all at. Good. So Amar Abaye lo kasha. So Abaye says, not a difficulty. Meaning, the first part of the Mishnah is correct, the second part of the Mishnah is correct. They're just representing two different time periods of the Beis HaMikdash. Kan korim takana, kan la'achar takana. There was a takana in the Beit HaMikdash. They made an institution. That's not a good word. They made a decree. Did not. And for this now, we're going to quote a Mishnah in Yuma. B'rishona kol mishe rotz lichom es mizbeach torim b'zman she'em merubin ratzim v'alim b'kevesh kol akodem es chaver b'toch arba amos zacha. Okay, how do they settle the following dilemma? More than one coin came up, woke up early in the morning for Trumas Hadeshen. Okay, so what we did is we had a foot race. Foot race up the ramp. The ramp was 30 amas. Now, I'll tell you the truth. The ramp was longer than 30 amas. 32, I think we said, right? It's the hypotenuse of a triangle, right? You want to do the math. It's the hypotenuse of a triangle that's 30 in length and 9 amas in height. Okay? A squared, B squared, C squared, Pythagorean. Okay, good. So anyway, so it's so you want to just you want to translate that loosely into feet. It's approximately a 60 foot race up the ramp, okay, an incline. Okay.
And what's
the height? The height, in feet or in amas? In amas, 9 amas high. Right? The Kronos were one additional amma. So 9 amas high, 30 amas in length. Okay. And if you want to know what the incline is, so then you go back to your geometry.
Square root of 981.
Huh?
Square root of 981.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're talking about approximately a 60-foot foot race. Okay? And just in case you don't have a good visual about this, right? It's a, huh?
Going up,
right? It's a... It's a 20-yard... It's a 20-yard pass. Okay.
From the pitcher's mound to the
home plate.
All right.
I didn't know they had
to
run more.
I don't know. It sounds like the race started at the base of the ramp. Anyway, so it's a foot race. And whoever gets up to the top of the Mizbeach first wins the foot race. And that's how it got settled. And that was the old way that we used to settle things. And what if what if it was a tie at the top of the ramp? So Amamuna Omer Lahem, it's Biu. And so then, so if there's a tie, so obviously two people can't do the Trumas HaDeshen, so then we would do a lottery, but a lottery over here doesn't mean like a, doesn't, not like an established lottery, it means that we're going to just simply, you know, almost like rock, paper, scissors, but it's like, in other words, everyone would stick out a finger. Now, the way it worked is he stuck out one finger or two fingers. The Kohen came out with a number, not the Kohen, the Mamuna. The appointed individual, the administrator, would come out with a number, and then he would start counting, and okay, that's...
Wow.
The Ein Motzin Godel B'Mikdash. And you can't stick out your thumb. There are various explanations of why you can't stick out your thumb. Perhaps because the thumb is very easily retractable. All right, anyway, so Maisa Shavin Ratzin Va'olam B'Kavesh V'Dachaf Echad Mehem Eschaver V'Nishbara Raglo. So the Mishnah Yuma then goes on to tell us that one time there was a foot race up the ramp, and there was a dead heat. And they were side by side, and one Kohen did the unthinkable. And that is, he pushed the other Kohen off the side of the ramp. Now that's a terrible fall, because you're now, assuming we're like towards the top of the ramp, you're talking about 9 amas in the air, right? No railing on the ramp. So 9 amas in the air, so a fall like that's an 18-foot drop. That's a serious...
You did teach us that angry,
right? Yeah, they were somewhat cantankerous, but, you know, I say that now in the comfort of not having a Kohen in this room. I'm not sure if I would say...
whether they were angry or very kind.
The Gemara says that they are somewhat... Yeah, there's reason.
Yeah.
They're very excitable. That's a nice way to say it. So, Uchisharo, based in Shayuban, Lide Sakana. So now based in said, okay, obviously the system is not an effective system. It's good. It helps determine the Kohen, but if someone's going to get hurt, and the guy broke his leg, meaning 18-foot fall, he broke his leg, right? Baruch Hashem, he didn't die, right? So the whole thing is dangerous. So he can assure you, turn Mr. Zbech Ella Befayas. So therefore, the way they settled it is no longer foot race up the ramp, but now lottery right from the beginning. That's how you understand the Mishnah. Our Mishnah, it's an encryption in the Mishnah. You don't see any of this really in our Mishnah, but our Mishnah alludes to the earlier system which was used, which was the foot race, and then our Mishnah then reflects the position of the Achar Takana, which is then they went straight to lottery.
Now, pious is, that literally means to appease. Does that mean not here? Yeah. So that means that.
No, it does, you're right, it means appease, but here it means lottery.
It actually literally means lottery here? Does it mean like this is the thing?
Good question, I'm not sure.
Right,
I'm not sure.
You follow pious.
All right.
It's the lottery.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
I, right, it's, you know.
Lotto.
Rav Amar Idiv Idilachar Takarna Vahachi Katani. Now, Rav is going to give the answer, which is how I assumed the Mishnah was going, and so good. So, in other words, the Rav says you don't have to read all that into our Mishnah. Our Mishnah could be much simpler, and that is the following: Mishu Rotzal Avol Lefayis Mashkin V'Tova Ashelo Yavi Amamuna. It's very simple, meaning Yitovo in preparation for the lottery. Not that the Mishnah is referring to a time of years gone by where there was a foot race up the ramp. No, our Mishnah is talking about where we resorted to the lottery right from the beginning, but you told them the mikveh before you went to the lottery. And the Rush explains beautifully, and the Rush gives a great explanation. Meaning, let's say now you're the winner of the lottery. Can you imagine how excited you are? Right, you just won this big lottery, and what would be your normal reaction? You're going to run right to the Truma Sedeshin, and oh, you didn't tovel yet, and right. In other words, then because of the excitement of winning, you're going to totally lose yourself. So what the Gemara now is, what Rav is explaining to our Mishnah is, you tovel the mikvah first, and now if you end up becoming the winner, you're ready to go. Okay. Mishnah. Next Mishnah of the Perek. And final Mishnah of the Perek. Anatos HaMafteach. Okay, now we're ready to go. Okay, so we're now finishing the night. We're now entering into the morning, and we're going to go into the Azara. Now, when I say we, I don't mean we. I mean we're talking now about the Kohanim. This is now all, it's all Kohanim now, from this point forward. And remember, the Kohanim, where were they primarily? In the Beis HaMokad. Right, that's where they guarded, that's where they slept. The base of, we're sleeping in the base of Mokad. And so now what we're going to do is we're going to go from the base of Mokad into the Azara. Now you want a good visual? So I got my picture up here. Again, everything is upside down, so forgive me. So they were sleeping over here, this is the north, and they were sleeping in the base of Mokad and in the chol in this section over here. And now, early in the morning, before sunrise, before dawn, so they would now walk out into the Azara. Now I'm just going to describe this just so you get a good visual of this, and then I'll go down and I'll read. Now basically you're going to have two groups of Kohanim. First of all, there's a little, there are major doors opening up from the Beis HaMokad into the Azara. Those doors were not opened. Those doors would not get opened until daytime. So there was what the Mishnah is going to be describing is some sort of, like a side door, right? It's called the Pishpesh. A side door that would allow these Kohanim to exit. And then what they would do is they would do an inspection of the Azara. One group of Kohanim would go around this way, one Kohanim would go around this way, and they would meet each other. Where is it?
Is this before doing the end?
Yes. This is the first thing they would do. Where's the chavitin being done? Oh, here we go. Here we go, right over here. Okay?
Over by this.
Right over here. So they would go around this way, they would go around this way. It seems like, from this picture, it seems like they had more to walk and more to traverse. It does not seem equidistant. Okay, it's an issue. But anyway, one would go this way, one would go this way, and they would meet right over here. At the Lishkas Osei Chavitim. I'll explain what that is in just a moment. Okay? And then after that point in time, they would then assign whoever's going to do the Truma Sedeshin, or maybe it was assigned already in the Beis HaMokad, and then he would do the Truma Sedeshin. Now, the Truma Sedeshin required him to first wash his hands and feet. Any avoda that you do in the Beis HaMikdash required you to wash your hands and feet. He would have to go to the Kiyor, he would wash his hands and feet. He would take a shovel. There's the shovel, it's called the Machta. He would go up the ramp, take from the pile, go back down the ramp, and place it right over here in the Beis HaDeshen. All this is going to be described in the Mishnah. I'm just giving you a visual.
One shovel.
What's it? Truma Sedeshen is not, in other words, we talked about this. There were two aspects. There was a Truma Sedeshen and the Hotzah Sedeshen. The Truma Sedeshen was daily, and the Hotzah Sedeshen was as needed. Okay. Let's see all this inside in the Mishnah. Okay, now tell us Mafteach upasach etz pishpesh. So they had a key. They kept the key. And they went out through the pishpesh, which was that side door. Menichnas mi beis hamokad la'azara. They would go now from the beis hamokad into the azara. Again, as I mentioned, this is now, it's not morning yet. It's before morning. It's dark. And they would have torches in their hands so that just simply they could see. They would divide into two groups. One group would go to the east and one group would go to the west. And as I described back over there, and they would go now around the Azara. For what purpose? Inspection. And they would inspect until the two of them met at the Lishka of the Chavitim. Now quickly, what's the Chavitim? Kohen Gadol daily had to offer a mincha. It was called the Minchas Chavitim. And so, they would meet at the Minchas Chavitim because they would tell the person who was in the Lishka, the Chavitim, or apparently they would assign somebody to go to Lishka Chavitim and basically say, time to start making the mincha. The Gemara later on will ask the question, well, isn't it a little too early for that? The Gemara is going to ask that question, we'll come back to that. Higiu el elu ve'elu amru shalom hakol shalom. Now they communicated with one another, meaning one traveled east and the other traveled west, and they made a sivuv, each one of them a half sivuv, and they met at the lishkas chavitim, and they would basically say to each other, "Everything good? Yeah, everything's good. Assuming everything's good. By the way, everything good." Meaning
what was the sivuv? The sivuv was around.
They went inside the Azara. One went around the Beis HaMikdash from behind, and the other one went in front of the Beis HaMikdash.
One was walking much longer.
Yeah, it seems that way. It does seem that way. What was Hakol Shalom? Meaning everything's good? Meaning nothing was taken, everything's in its place, everything's ready, meaning we're ready to do the Avoda today. Hey, Mita, just give me a second. So, Ve'elu Amru Shalom, Hakol Shalom. Hey, Mita, Ose Chavitim, La'asos Chavitim. And they now say to the chavitim maker, okay, time to make the chavitim. Misha zach l'trom as a mizbech, who yitrom? Now, the one who was assigned and won the lottery to do the trumas hadeshin, so fine. And apparently, right, I think I'm right in that the assignment was done in the Beis HaMokan. So the one who won the lottery now, he's ready to go. And they remind him, don't touch a thing until you do Kiddush Yadayim Ve'Raglayim. You have to wash your hands and feet. Everyone who's doing the Avoda must wash his hands and feet. Do you remember what we learned? What was this? Back in Zvachim. Right? If you don't do Kiddush Yadayim Ve'Raglayim, so it invalidates the Avoda. And it's Chiyuv Misa. So you have to wash your hands and feet. So Mina Kiyur, and you have to go to the Kiyur. I point out the Kiyur is to the east of the, sorry, to the west of the ramp. And the shovel is right there between the ramp and the Beis HaMikdash. Nobody goes with him. In other words, he does this alone. Meaning, for reasons which I'm not sure why, and the Gemara does not explain, so he goes unaccompanied. He's got to go now to the other side of the ramp, so they're going to lose visibility of him, and now he's got to first wash his hands and feet, he then will take the shovel, the Mishnah goes on to explain. And he doesn't even take a ner with him, so how is he going to see? Because remember, he's now walking around the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach had a fire going on it, called a Laila. Eshu Mizbeach lo tukad bo, the fire never extinguished. So he did have light from the Mizbeach. Lo hayu roen oso, velo hayu shomim es kolo, they didn't see him, they were unable to hear him. Ashu shomim kola esha asa ben katin muchni likior. But they heard the wheel churning. Because the kiyur was set up by Ben Katin. When we get to Midos, we'll talk more about this wheel. But there was a wheel which allowed you to crank water, to have the water go down into the ground, and the water to come back up. And when we get to Midos, we'll talk more about this apparatus that was used. And now they knew, so interesting, the Mishnah gives this whole thing from the perspective of the other Kohanim, meaning not the one who's actually doing the Avoda. So now they're acknowledging to one another, okay, he's washing his hands and feet. Minakira nata machtas akasef, he took the silver shovel. Va'ala l'rosh ha-mizbeach, and he goes up to the mizbeach, pinas ha-gachalim helach chota es ha-ma'acholos ha-panimios. Now we described this earlier, where what he would do is he would move the outer coals. He went up the ramp. He's now on the top of the Mizbeach. He moves aside the outer coals because he wants to get to the heart of the fire. He wants pure ash. So he gets to the heart of the fire. Yayrate, he goes down the ramp. Higiel, a ritzpah. Now he goes all the way to the bottom of the ramp. And hafach panel of stamphon, he's making a U-turn. Now he's making if you're following the visual well, he's making two left turns. Meaning he's going down the ramp, left turn, and now he's facing north. Right? Panel Vitzafon, Holech Mimizrach Shokevish Kasar Amos. Now he goes about 10 Amos now alongside the eastern side of the ramp. Savas a gachama gabe eritzpah, he would leave the ashes right there on the floor. Rachuk min hakevesh losha tfachim, 3 tfachim, right, approximately 9 inches away from the ramp. Malkum shenosnim marasa ofer disha mizbecha panim v'dishna menorah. And oh, by the way, says the Mishnah, it's the same place where the crop was thrown of the ola bird, and the same place where after cleaning out the mizbecha panimi and the menorah, those ashes are deposited in the same exact place. Okay, let's stop over here where the time has run out. Well, tomorrow we'll just finish up the little bit of Gemara that we have on this perek, and we start the second perek of Tamid tomorrow.